Hey, In the Thick listeners. Today's episode includes some discussion about sexual assault. If you need to skip today's episode, we understand.
What greater of a hypocrisy than the daughter of an immigrant joining the military to give her life for what?
Uno, dos, tres!
Hey, welcome to In the Thick. This is a podcast about politics, race, and culture from a multi-layered POC perspective. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Joining us from Oberlin, Ohio, Professor Gina Perez, cultural anthropologist, author, and professor of comparative American studies at Oberlin College. Hey, Gina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for being in Ohio. We need you. And joining us from New Jersey, also a very important state, is Pam Campos Palma. She's a veteran, a foreign policy organizer, and a senior political strategist. At the Working Families Party. Welcome, Pam.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
All right. So we are looking at a sad story, the story of Vanessa Guillen. But we're going to put it into a larger context, right? We hope everybody knows the story of Vanessa Guillen. She's a 20-year-old specialist in the U.S. Army who went missing from Fort Hood, an army base in Killeen, Texas, which is about like 50 minutes away from Austin,
right,
at the end of April. When many of us, at least here in the East Coast, were like in the throes of like pandemic insanity.
Yeah.
More than 2 months later, there was an extensive manhunt. Finally, there was a grassroots campaign led by Latina women, service members and veterans. And there was national outrage. And the family was finally told that their daughter's remains had been found. With the backdrop of a global pandemic and, you know, this real uprising for racial justice, long-held accusations have reemerged into the national spotlight around the military, sexual violence in the military, violence and how you protect yourself from other people who have guns and you're living on a base in the military, and so many other intertwined injustices and systems that ultimately were responsible for Vanessa's disappearance and death. So, Pam, you've been actively involved in the campaign for justice for Vanessa, as well as speaking out on these issues, in fact, for years. Gina, you as an academic have written extensively about the military's relationship specifically with Latino and Latina communities. So, Gina, we're going to start with you. Talk about the significance of this case and what it's putting into the national spotlight from your perspective.
Well, as you say, this is such a tragic set of circumstances that brings us here together. But I think it's also really kind of an important opportunity to honor Vanessa's life and, you know, the incredible activism and extraordinary advocacy of her sisters, her younger sister, Lupe, and her other sister and her mother to bring this to national attention. And I think for me, one of the things that's so extraordinary about this is that for some people, this is new, that this is something that is surprising to people because I think for many people like Pam and others who are have been in the military know that issues of sexual violence and sexual harassment in the military have a long history. And violence against Latinas, and I think the way that in social media and in news media have framed this as a femicide, we also know that this has a long history in our communities, a long, sad history in our communities. So for me, this is a real opportunity to draw attention to things that we don't want to pay attention to and to really hold our elected officials accountable to addressing these longstanding problems that have this incredible impact on Latinas and women's lives and on their families and on the communities that they have sworn to protect and that they have enlisted in the military to try to protect. And so I see this as a tragedy that is also a real opportunity.
Pam, do you see it the same way? A tragedy that's an opportunity from your perspective as somebody who served in the military. What stands out about the importance of this case?
I will tell you, you know, I organize around pretty heavy topics, right? Ending wars, militarism, violence, holding the Department of Defense accountable. And when I heard about the Guillen disappearance, right? Because we can't forget that she was disappeared. She was disappeared for months. And I learned about it through Spanish language media and social media networks, not through the English media networks. And the sad and devastating part is that Vanessa Guillen is one of thousands on thousands. And I think the social media explosion that has happened with I Am Vanessa Guillen, that hashtag, shows you how prevalent this is.
Right.
What is different, however, is I do think that we are in a reckoning moment in this country where everyday people are no longer satisfied with hypocrisies.
Yeah.
And what greater of a hypocrisy than the daughter of an immigrant joining the military to give her life for what? Right? Mm. What caught my ear when I heard Gloria Guillen, Vanessa Guillen's immigrant mother, on the Spanish language news is she was very clear about what was happening. She said, "Mi hija, my daughter told me that she was being sexually harassed by a superior," right?
Right.
And nothing was done. There was little to no urgency. Gloria Guillen has also done what often doesn't happen, which is she has not treated the military, the Department of Defense, generals, she has not treated them with blind allegiance or respectability. She has said, "I don't care that I'm a working class Latina, you're going to respect me and you're going to give me answers."
Right.
Which is different, right? And I think that blind allegiance, we'll get into it, but blind allegiance to the institutions have really led us astray and not had any accountability for decades. And the last thing is, you know, I organize the military veteran community, war-affected communities to make real change. But one thing that has been different is I got a call a few days before July 4th. Women veteran advocates, we jumped on a Zoom call.
Right.
And we were all devastated because it was the day that they had found her murdered. And we said, we need to do something. And we said, enough. We do not have to rip open our wounds anymore to relitigate that this is a problem. And so one thing we did that was differently is that for decades, predominantly women, but survivors of military sexual violence have often drudged up their trauma and rape stories and, you know, told them over and over and over again. And this time, that's not the advocacy that happened. This time we said, someone needs to be held accountable. You know this is a problem and you've known for decades.
Julio, you know what's interesting there is that when I was covering this issue at the height of the Iraq War, the moniker was MST. Military sexual trauma, which is very different than what Pam just said.
Right.
Military sexual violence.
Yeah.
The military before kind of categorized it. It was like a trauma. Oh, it's something that happened. No, it's violence. And that is why Vanessa was doing the right thing. She was alerting her mom. This is happening.
Right. And just to give people more context, at the end of July, the Guillen family and their lawyer, they traveled from Texas to Washington, D.C., accompanied by a caravan of supporters to introduce a bill that is called hashtag I am Vanessa Guillen to Congress and to meet with President Trump. So the bill would allow active duty service members to file sexual harassment and assault claims to a third party agency, right, instead of through their chain of command. So here is Vanessa's 16-year-old sister, Lupe, speaking to the protesters who marched in D.C. to demand justice for her sister.
It's painful for me to see my mom every day and to not tell her the truth. It's painful for my father. It's painful for my sisters and brothers. It's painful for my little brother knowing that he's never going to see Vanessa. Never again. Because for him, it's supposed to be held accountable. Her leadership has to be held accountable. Because since I remember, because I do have a brain, not like them, because they don't think over and over again. They signed to protect and respect every soldier. But if they protect my sister, they didn't respect my sister. Instead, they killed her. They sexually harassed her. And she's not here with me. She can be here.
Wow, 16 years old. I'm, you know, as a dad, just need a moment. But Pam, you mentioned, right, that you've been on the front lines of the movement to seek justice for Vanessa. And you also mentioned thousands of other active duty servicewomen, right, and veterans who've expressed an outpouring of support with the hashtag I am Vanessa Guillen.
So Pam, you, just so our dear listener understands, you helped to spearhead a letter that was signed by more than 4,000 women veterans and handed to legislators at the end of July, highlighting what people have been saying. Again, for decades, I was covering this 2003, that the military has a problem with regard to sexual assault, structural racism, and a culture of impunity. And the letter that you spearheaded says, quote, "Despite decades of unquestionable proof advocacy, and cries for change, cases of sexual violence perpetrated by our fellow service members and leaders have continued to rise. Structural racism is endemic throughout the armed forces, creating a double burden for service members of color who have endured sexual harassment and assault. Frequently, the destructive traumas these issues generate are perpetrated by the very chain of command we are told to rely on. Too many leaders remain either unwilling to or incapable of putting a firm stop to sexual assault and sexual harassment, nor do they pursue justice when these crimes occur in their units. So, Pam, I'm going to tell you, I just got emotional because when I was on the Army base at Fort Hood in Killeen, Texas, the woman who I interviewed who used to head up the unit back then, she actually took out a little wand. We got this on television. She said, I wish we could just go poof and make it go away. This was under the George W. Bush administration.
Wow.
This was almost 20 years ago now. This is not new. So when you're talking about this issue of sexual assault, it's like they just don't care. That was a long wind up to the question, Pam. But yes, what do you want? What are you demanding?
I mean, it's important to remember that the military is not a regular workplace. You have given up several of your rights to sign that contract and take that oath. And so the fact that active duty service members signed our letter, which is one of the boldest letters that a lot of advocates have seen in all of the decades that they've done this work, tells you the urgency and the criticality for the want for change. And so one thing that brought us together is we saw the Latino community around the Guillen family, but where were the veterans organizations?
Right.
Where were the military advocates? Right? It was glaring to us. And so we decided in this letter to double down on the extraordinary demands of Gloria Guillen and the Guillen family. She's very clear. Shut down that fucking base.
Whoa.
That is a cesspool.
She wants to shut down Fort Hood. She's like, shut it down.
She wants to shut down Fort Hood.
Damn.
And I can't tell you how much energy there is because decades and decades and decades of reports of crimes.
I'm telling you.
Of murders, of assaults. I mean, it's public.
Yeah.
You know, people say, well, where do you get this data?
Right.
It is public record. There are reports.
On an army base, Julio, on an army base.
Right. Not only the assaults, but the deaths this year alone.
There have been 23 deaths of Fort Hood soldiers this year alone. And in the
23?
23 deaths this year alone. You know, the Fort Hood officials themselves gave this information. And that is what is even more wild. You know, one of the things that is a real issue here is an army and a Department of Defense that get to self-investigate. So many deaths are categorized as suicides. And when you look at the breakdown of it, they are suicides, they're quote accidents,
right.
They're off-duty incidents. One of them is pending an autopsy, so it's unknown. And three of them are homicides, including Vanessa Guillen, who disappeared off one of the most secure installations, a military base, right? And so at the end of the day, this is a high number, right? These are not war casualties.
Yeah.
These are soldiers on one of the largest army installations in the United States of America, one of the most secure places. And so the question that is called by a Gloria Guillen about shutting down Fort Hood is, where is the leadership? Who is being held accountable for not protecting our soldiers? So that's one demand. The second demand that we are making in line with the family is fire the chain of command. They clearly failed at their job. They clearly, you know, are not living up to that expectation. And importantly, you know, it came out in a House Armed Services Committee that the review of the Secretary of the Army did not cover Vanessa Guillen's unit. And so why?
Wait a second. What?
Yes.
Well, you know, we're hearing all this astonishing information, but another thing that's astonishing about the case is how when Vanessa initially disappeared at the end of April, there was almost no coverage of her case in the mainstream English language media. Because I'm with Pam about the Spanish language in this case, because that's the way I found out about it. But it also took this massive grassroots campaign to uplift her family story and demands, and obviously ultimately to find answers. And I don't know about you, Maria, but my Instagram and my Twitter feed, all the badass Latinas that I follow who are friends of mine or journalists, that's all I saw. Vanessa Guillen, Vanessa Guillen. But let's talk about the silence around these issues and how even when stories like Vanessa's, and yes, they're many of these stories, and for years, when these stories make the headlines, they're often framed as individual tragedies rather than part of systemic violence and impunity within the military, which is what Pam's talking about.
Right.
Honestly, if we were just reading about this case for the first time, they might actually think that Vanessa Guillen died in battle.
Whoa.
Instead of as a victim of femicide right here in the U.S. Gina, let's start talking about this culture of silence around gender violence in the military. And how does this connect to Vanessa's story?
Yeah, the culture of silence is pervasive. It's one that I think Pam spoke really powerfully to, that women are required or expected to endure. But it's one that I think is so bound up with some of the most basic parts of what it means to be a military, which is about masculinity and hypermasculinity, about suffering and silence, around just being able to muscle through, you know, some of the most difficult moments of your life in the name of serving your nation. And so, you know, this culture of silence around the military, we see it just so blatantly right now, but it's one that I think has always allowed for women to be the victims of sexualized violence and all kinds of other violences as well.
Right.
I mean, you know,
right.
we're focusing on, you know, sexual violence, but the whole idea of the military is premised on violence. And so I think that that's something that we often kind of fail to really grapple with. Like, what does it mean to have this kind of military and to have the strongest military in the world? And for what reasons, right?
Pam, so you were one of many Latinas and service women who led this amazing truth-telling campaign to uplift Vanessa's story.
Yeah.
You also talk about the ways in which images and stories of soldiers and veterans are used and manipulated by right-wing politicians to further their agendas. Over the summer, there was a highly publicized event of Trump, you know, who is, of course, one of the most racist and violently anti-immigrant, actually very specifically anti-Mexican presidents in history.
I think he's up there.
And he was meeting with the Guillen family
right.
during their caravan that made its way to Washington, D.C. And we're going to talk more about that visit later because I do have some questions. But Pam, your organization, Vets for the People, is telling a very different story of what it means to be a veteran and a member of the military, which is why this moment is another one of these moments in history when people on the ground are reframing the narrative. And we so appreciate that. So as you organize with fellow service people in particular right now in solidarity with the movement for Black Lives, what's the importance of veterans and military families reclaiming their stories in the fight for justice?
Yeah. Veterans and military families have actually been part of movements throughout history. Cesar Chavez was a Navy veteran,
right?
Harriet Tubman died with military honors.
Right.
The trans flag actually was created by a veteran as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has been by design that right-wing politicians that want to further these ethno-nationalist agendas use us as props.
Mm.
And frankly, there's been no opposition to it. Many people, you know, thank you for your service. Thank you for your service. But America and the American society has really lost contact with the military. Many Americans don't really understand the military, don't know, you know, a service member.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really easy for them to weaponize us.
Yes.
And it's never been more important for us to claim our voices because our experiences are dynamic. The fact that Latina veterans and service women are standing up and multiracial veterans are flanking us is critical in a time when this country is making a big decision. Who gets to be an American and who does not, right? It is my assessment that if Vanessa Guillen had been a white officer, there would have been more urgency around her case.
I agree 100%. I mean, I don't care what anyone says about that.
I agree.
Pam, I agree 100%. With that.
Although I would probably say it still would have taken some time to, because it's a woman.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you need to understand that within the military.
You're right.
My understanding, and of course, historically, you still have people who have questions about whether or not women should be serving and in combat, right?
Yeah.
So it's been since forever, since the inception, because women were denied access to the military.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an institution that, again, was born from patriarchy and lives in that.
Absolutely. Justice would have been denied and delayed. Absolutely. But the Vanessa Guillen case and Latinas in particular have been speaking out about this multi-layered reality that even when an immigrant gives their child to this country, mm-hmm. you are not American enough yes. to mm-hmm. deserve that kind of honor and valor. And many countless women who have served, mm-hmm. you don't see women out there being like, I'm starting a company because I'm a veteran and I'm so proud of my service.
Right.
You know, I hear the quote a lot, my service was tarnished because of the abuse that I endured. Mm-hmm. The greatest hypocrisy that keeps me up and doing this work mm-hmm. is the politicians, the corrupt politicians across the political spectrum, but especially egregious and dangerously the right-wing politicians who say that they love the troops. And I believe that this president is doing that to the Guillen family.
Yes.
Saying that they love the troops and are good on the troops to gain stolen valor mm-hmm. while still throwing us in wars that they profit from, while still not really defining what the role of the military is, so that an ethno-nationalist president can abuse it. And let's not forget, you know, he has tried to exploit the military against our own civilians.
Right.
He has tried to exploit militarized forces, explicitly targeting Black and brown communities.
Sadly, you know, when you spend a lot of time with people who are in the military and you kind of deconstruct it, I mean, you are trained to kill.
Right. Right.
You ultimately are. And that is something that, you know, you may never have to, but the training is to kill.
Yeah.
And more people who look like Vanessa, Latinos and Latinas, are in the U.S. Army getting trained to do this.
Yeah.
While both Black Americans and Latinos are targeted by military recruitment, and by the way, also Pacific Islanders, mm-hmm. Guam, mm-hmm. you know, specifically Puerto Ricans, right?
Right.
Pew Research has found that over the recent years, from 2004 to 2017, the enlistment of Black people has actually decreased.
Right.
While Latino and Latina enlistment has risen, mm-hmm. and it's actually the fastest growing POC population in the military, okay? Back in 2015, we reported about this on Latino USA. Lorenza de la Rosa was worried about what kind of future the Army would provide for her daughter.
Bueno, me sentí un poco asustada.
She says she was scared.
Porque decirme, mi hija, me voy para el Army.
Would her daughter have to go to war? Would she have to kill people? And she says she didn't agree with that. But after 16 years of Army service and counting, Sergeant First Class Betances says her mom's really come around.
Now, if you go to Washington Heights, everybody knows my mother. They call her Negrita. And she will tell everybody, if you're not doing anything with your life, go see Janissa and she'll put you in boots.
Hold on. So your mother's recruiting for you?
Absolutely. My mother has my business cards. She tells them, if you got in trouble with the law, just go ask her. Go bring your paperwork and go ask her. And she'll let you know if you qualify or you don't.
Gina, this is something that you've covered extensively.
Yeah.
In our reporting and in your research, we talk about how the Army essentially markets itself to young Latinos by selling them to this idea that they're going to belong
yeah.
to something.
What single high school activity today is responsible for dramatically changing the lives of so many young people? Where are high school students learning valuable lessons in leadership, integrity, honesty, commitment, citizenship, and respect? And where are instructors using dynamic methods of teaching, focusing on the way students learn, and applying those skills in and out of the classroom? The answer? Army Junior ROTC.
Yes.
And so just to give sort of more context about your military recruitment research, mm-hmm. because you focus specifically on the Army Junior Reserve Officers Training Corps, or JROTC.
Yeah.
And you have a book called Citizen, Student, Soldier, Latino, Latina Youth, and the American Dream, where you trace the history of this program, how it grew in times of social unrest. Hello, people.
Yeah.
Even though the program was officially implemented in 1916 when President Woodrow Wilson, mm-hmm. he actually signed the National Defense Act, this part is amazing. It wasn't until the 1992 LA riots,
yep.
after the Rodney King beating,
right.
and the white police officers were acquitted, that JROTC's presence began to more than double in U.S. schools.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And then later in 2001, the presence of the military was cemented right into the landscape of schools.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the passage of the No Child Left Behind Act
yes.
mandated public schools to
yeah.
give military recruiters access to student contact information or else risk losing federal funding.
Right.
You
right.
know, I just want to share a personal story growing up, because when I moved from Puerto Rico to the Bronx, I lived in the Fordham Road area, right? And anyone that knows that area, there's this classic, like, military recruiting, like, section. You know, it's right in the middle of the Grand Concourse. And, you know, when you really start thinking about it, as that neighborhood was changing and it was becoming blacker and browner, and this is kind of in the late 70s, early 80s, but then I went back in the 90s, that was a presence. It was literally in that presence, and you see that.
Yeah.
And so, Gina, can you talk about all these ripple effects and the context of how recruiting, you know, since the 90s has really impacted Black and Latino communities?
Yeah, I think the thing about JROTC is that it's really insidious. You know, the way that it is a class that students can voluntarily take in their high school to meet graduation requirements. In the Chicago Public Schools, you know, it's one of the largest programs in the country. Students can take JROTC to meet vocational training requirements, you know, to graduate from high school. And so there's a way that it's seen as just another kind of class. But the difference is that it is the kind of class that allows students to align themselves in what is seen to be by the broader public as something positive, as doing something that, you know, is good for your community. And the fact that a recent study just showed that, you know, the number of JROTC units, they exist and are proliferating in low-income communities of color, and that they actually are underrepresented in low-income rural white communities. And so the fact that over the course of a little over 100 years, there has been back and forth about whether or not this is the kind of program that the federal government should be investing in, totally is exploded in the 1990s with the rise of unrest and the Rodney King riots. And so one of the things that happens is that the caps that had existed prior, there had been a cap to the number of JROTC units that could exist in the country. Suddenly those caps are lifted, and there is an increase in trying to grow JROTC to right now, it's over 3,000 units across the United States, with over 500,000 students who are just in JROTC programs in American public high school. And that doesn't necessarily include all the other ways that young Latinas, Latinos, and students of color are implicated and involved in other kinds of militarized education or other kinds of militarized opportunities, and how that's expanding at the moment in which, you know, college access and college counselors on high schools and other kinds of opportunities are shrinking.
Yeah.
And so for me, it creates this perfect opportunity then for overdetermining who thinks of the military as an option for themselves after high school.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the things that really struck me in listening to Ms. Guillen's, just her anguish, her sister's anguish, is that they talked about how Vanessa wanted to serve and she wanted to do something valuable and give something back. She wanted to protect her family and her community and her nation. And she was really proud of being able to do that through the military. But what's so tragic is that we have such a lack of imagination of creating those kinds of valuable spaces that are not necessarily tied to the U.S. military, where people can feel valued, they can feel respected. That was the other thing that came up when Ms. Guillen was with President Trump. Her sister kept on saying that they want respect, that we want to feel respected. And so many of the students who I've interviewed in my research on JROTC talk about how, as young Latinos who are often not treated with much respect in public space, when you wear that military cadet uniform for JROTC, suddenly they're seen differently and they feel respected. Right. They feel seen in a way that's positive instead of feeling stigmatized.
Yeah.
So white people are less afraid of them because they're wearing that outfit, right?
Oh, damn.
So Pam, look, I was in a high school in Texas with recruiters. They are relentless. Also, it is a quota. They get paid more. There are all kinds of bonuses. So they are relentless on the phone. They're everywhere, right? So you, in fact, were recruited into the military in high school. Just share that story with us.
Sure. And I, you know, I preface this by saying, I mean, this is one of the hardest conversations that I'm often in. And right now is at a fever pitch, because I think there is a crisis of what does military service actually mean in an institution that doesn't have a mission, and that the mission, as you know, was just stated by Gina, is a bit nefarious and racist and damaging. So I, you know, I grew up working class. My mother is from Honduras. She immigrated to Boston, and I was very bright. I was actually in a gifted children's program, plucked out of my neighborhood to go to a more affluent school. But I experienced a lot of racism and classism. And I'm one of the school to military pipeline kids. Mm-hmm. Mm. A guidance counselor told my mother, mm-hmm. kids like you just don't go. You just don't go to college and actually wow. would be a waste of money. And, right. you know, something really pivotal here is mm-hmm. I just remember that everything in my being then and now was to live up to my mother's immigrant sacrifice. Yep. And so it was my mother who asked me to enlist, because the other crisis in our nation is an economic crisis. People have to work multiple jobs, yep. like incredible student debt, right? What are the options? And so my mother saw an Air Force commercial. You know, she thought I could be a pilot. She thought I could travel the world and get education and healthcare. Right. And so she encouraged me to enlist. And I picked being an intelligence analyst because I thought it would give me the best shot. Mm-hmm. And I enlisted in 2006 after, you know, 9/11.
In the height, yeah.
Wow.
And I also enlisted, which I... In my experience, because I have mentored Latinx youth around this, many people like myself did not know a military service member, someone who served. And so when I enlisted, it was a black hole. It was a culture shock in many ways. And so there were recruiters at my school. And it is common knowledge in the military community that recruiters are not the best among us. You know, they do not uphold the core values of integrity and excellence. You know, they are salesmen yes. in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You mentioned, you know, we're trained to kill. But I think even more importantly than that, especially in this era, one of the biggest dangers, I think, is that the military has evolved to be socially progressive, air quotes, right? Like, yeah. I'm a queer woman and I served in an era of, you know, don't ask, don't tell was repealed. And we have more women in combat roles and we have more people of color. But mm-hmm. that doesn't change the mission of this institution. Mm-hmm. And the other aspect of this is we are trained to be killed
right.
as well.
Whoa.
We are, you know, so that is another okay. part of the depreciation. And there is something that I feel very personal. As someone who gave my youth, my body, my life in service, we don't talk enough about moral injury and moral conscience. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, as a counterterrorism intelligence analyst, at a very young age, I started really understanding the deep impacts of the question, what are we doing here?
Right.
What did I give my life for? Right.
Yeah.
And so that kind of moral consciousness clash is also really important, because if you are the child of an immigrant and all you want to do is live up to, you know, your parents' sacrifice, and you would give anything.
Right.
It is my opinion that the Department of Defense military recruiters feed upon that want.
Of course.
They know that very well.
Right.
Yeah, they know that. First of all, Pam, thank you for sharing that story with us. Thank you so much. You know, one of the things about all this, it's not just the military.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's government institutions like Customs and Border Protection, Immigration and Customs Enforcement,
right.
that also heavily recruit mm-hmm. working class Latinos. We went to the Rio Grande Valley, or even if you go to any border town, like Maria and I have been there, you've covered Maria. When you see these officers, it's like Rodriguez and Gomez, and mm-hmm. you know, and it's the very same Latino and Latina youth that are being recruited by CBP, ICE, and the military.
Me, I was.
Exactly, right. And these are the people we see demonized in the media. It's their communities that are being over-policed, under-resourced, and now are among the hardest hit by COVID-19.
Right.
So Gina,
yeah.
in your book, you examine how at the same time that the seemingly endless wars in Iraq and Afghanistan created a need for more military recruits, mm-hmm. at the same time, because remember, this is when DHS was formed and ICE was formed, there were also increasing anti-immigrant sentiments and legislation.
Right.
And I'm quoting from your book, and you write, questions about citizenship, who is a citizen, and what are the obligations of those who lay claim to citizenship status, loomed large and raised particularly vexing problems for U.S. Latinos whose youth, marginal economic status, and growing numbers
yeah.
made them simultaneously a source of hope for contributing to the ranks of the all-volunteer force military and a source of fear and threat to the nation. Like that contrast.
Yeah.
Gina, explain that tension. I mean, hearing Pam's story, right?
Yeah.
Pam is sort of, I mean, in a way, Pam, and I don't want to generalize your story, but your story is very typical mm-hmm. of that time. So, Gina, can you explain that hypocrisy in a lot of ways?
No, absolutely. I think that, you know, it's not lost on the military recruiters that Pam referred to that in this moment of an all-volunteer force military that you have to recruit people. You have to convince people that joining the military is something that's worthwhile. And I think that it's very clear that the socioeconomic conditions that a lot of working class communities and a lot of working class Latino families live in mean that those opportunities are very limited. And so the military becomes one of those avenues for economic mobility,
yeah,
but also of social mobility, but also a feeling of inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what, you know, what's so powerful about what you were saying, Pam, is also this idea that when you're the child of immigrants and first generation or second generation, there's also this sense for a lot of families, they want to give something back. They want to give something back to a country that they feel like has given them so much.
Mm.
Even while people have these conflicted kinds of relationships to the military, because remember, for a lot of Latino families, they come from countries where there's nothing positive about militaries.
Exactly.
You know? And,
great
and
point.
So there's a way in which I think that people are navigating this, but they're also kind of seeing this as a means to an end, and a means to an end that allows for a certain kind of stability. And I think, you know, unlike in Pam's case, for a lot of young Latinos, they come from families that have long military histories. They have uncles and grandfathers and fathers and aunts who have been in the military. They're often proud of them. They're people who are seen as quote unquote success stories in their communities and their families. And so that becomes another kind of way that people kind of think about joining the military as one avenue for economic and social mobility. And again, I can't underemphasize the importance of that feeling of respect and a feeling like you've given something and that you really are the real American, mm, that you're living up to kind of the excellence of American, mm-hmm, identity.
Let's move on to our final segment, which we call La Última y Nos Vamos, the last one before you go, or last call.
Now, it was definitely strange to see the beautiful and distinguished Guillen family,
yeah,
meeting with somebody who is the opposite of that, but who happens to be the president of this country. It was a moment that was missed because actually it was never fully translated into English. I wonder why.
Right.
So listen closely to what Gloria Guillen, Vanessa's mama from Zacatecas, Mexico, says to Trump in Spanish.
¿Puedo decirle algo?
Yes, please.
Okay. Mire, mi hija ya es historia. Es historia por toda la nación, por todo el mundo.
Her daughter's story is a story of the whole nation. It's for everyone.
Mi hija la ha soñado muchas veces y me dice que salve a unos niños, que salve a unos niños. Yo no sé qué niños se refiere. Pero yo quiero que usted me ayude, no sé qué niños. No sé si son los niños que están en la frontera, no sé, pero ella me dice que salve los niños, que salve los niños. Y es lo que quiero que me ayude también en esos niños, porque ella es historia. Usted va a ser parte de esa historia. Si usted me ayuda, va a ser parte de esa historia. Algo bueno que se hizo a la nación.
So it's actually deep on so many levels,
yeah,
because Gloria, you can see that she's showing respect and deference. She says, can I ask a final question?
Right.
And then she says, look, basically, my daughter comes to me in my dreams. She's history. This is a part of history, but she comes to my dreams and she's telling me that children need to be saved.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I'm not sure which children, but maybe it's the children at the border. And maybe you can help me. Maybe you can help me to understand what children, and maybe you can help and do something good. So, mm-hmm, in thinking of this beautiful image of Vanessa speaking to her mother through her dreams about fighting for justice, for more than just herself,
yeah,
I want to end by asking the both of you what your dreams of a just world look like. So what, in fact, could justice for Vanessa Guillen look like on a deeper systematic level? We'll start with you, Gina.
Wow, that's a tough one. I mean, at the very least, the independent body for young Latinas and young women to be able to report sexual assault in the military, independent of their chain of command, is at the very, very least. But I was also struck by that comment in the moment when they're together, when she was talking about the children. And I think that this is, an opportunity to draw attention to all the kinds of violences that we're facing and that we're dealing with, and the incredible grief and rage and need to change. And to see Vanessa Guillen's family be at the forefront of this, I can't think of anything more American than to really push for justicia. And that was another word that she kept on using over and over again, is to really be clear about justicia y la verdad, the truth. And I think that we're in a moment of reckoning, of truth-telling and of justice, that Vanessa Guillen is just one part of getting us to truth and justice.
Mm. Yeah, and her mom, Gloria Guillen. Take us out, Pam.
Oh, man, sorry, this is just emotional.
No, it's okay.
No, take a moment, Pam.
One thing I want to just really foot stomp is the conversation can not only move to reporting. And like, my question is, how are we eradicating and stopping the violence? And Gloria Guillen has been the most consistent, courageous voice on this. She actually also said, when she was in D.C., she said, "Do you know why we will close Fort Hood? We will close Fort Hood for a better future." She said, "We will build hospitals and schools and housing for veterans living under bridges." Mm. She said that. Mm. And I share her vision of a more prosperous world where we divest from violence and we invest in communities. I mean, I was an intelligence analyst that studied counterterrorism. I know deeply what violence looks like, mm-hmm. and I know what the roots of insecurity are. And so it was beautiful and healing, actually, for me to hear Gloria Guillen share that vision. I also share her vision where she has said, until there is justice, not just for Vanessa Guillen, but an actual overhaul of this system that treats rape as an occupational hazard, we will not encourage enlistment.
Right.
And women and allies across the country are saying, yes, we cannot in good conscience encourage our young people to enlist in a military without a mission that treats our people as expendable. I named my project Vets for the People because at the end of the day, I hear from countless veterans that no matter what their service story is, no matter the reason for joining, at the end of the day, they wanted to serve people.
Yeah.
They didn't want to serve politicians or corporations or, you know, false idols. And so we continue our service by fighting for actual change in a world that doesn't require destruction to have supremacy.
Yeah.
Wow. Deep. Thank you. Thank you so much. We really appreciate all of your work. And Vanessa, this one goes out for you, mamita. We're trying to do justice by you and by your family. Gina Perez, professor of comparative American studies at Oberlin College, and Pam Campos Palma, senior political strategist at the Working Families Party and a veteran. Thank you so much for joining Julio and me on this episode of In the Thick.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
This episode was produced by our summer intern, Ariel Goodman. Remember, dear listener, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us. It really helps, because where else would you hear a conversation like this? Also, remember, you can listen to In the Thick on Pandora, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell your friends and family to listen. In the Thick is produced by Nicole Rothwell, Noor Saudi, and our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow, Harshana Hatta, with editorial support from Erica Dilde. Our audio engineers are Stephanie Lebeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our intern is Ariel Goodman. Thanks to Raul Perez for recording me. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kept and ZZK Records. We'll see you in our next episode, dear listener. Thank you again so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Hasta la próxima. Ciao.
Peace out, everybody.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.